Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Frances Alonso reporting. Afghanistan's President Ashraf Ghani has paid tribute to American allies, including U.S. servicemen, for their support in advancing the cause of freedom.
U.S. soldiers are no longer engaged in combat. But we are delighted to have them at the train assist and advice mission.
Meanwhile, Mr. Ghani told a joint session of the U.S. Congress that they owe a profound debt to the United States.
The overwhelming majority of Afghans continue to see the partnership with the United States as foundational to our future.
Mr. Ghani's visit to the United States and his speech to Congress is part of an effort to repair relations between the two countries that were strained by nearly 14 years of war. Meanwhile, the Afghan president's visit comes as six people were killed when a suicide attacker detonated a car bomb in the center of the Afghan capital of Kabul. At least 22 others were injured. Officials Wednesday said that the blast went off in the Murad Khani district, which is close to the presidential compound, the defense ministry, and the finance ministry. An interior ministry spokesman says the intended target was unclear and no one has claimed responsibility for the attack. You can read more details on that at voanews.com. The French president and the German Chancellor Angela Merkel, as well as Spain's Mariano Rajoy Wednesday, visited the remote Alpine region where an Airbus plane smashed into a mountain ahead of an international homage to the 150 victims. What we hear here is the officials listening to details of the efforts there. VOA News. Officials in Nigeria say Boko Haram militants have kidnapped hundreds of people, including many children, from a town on the border with Niger. A Nigerian government spokesman tells the Associated Press that militants abducted residents of Damasak in Borno State as they withdrew from the town early this month. He added that the Islamist extremists went to primary schools, rounded up students and teachers, and then retreated. The spokesman said he could not specify how many people were kidnapped, but local residents put the number as high as 500. An international court has denied a request from former Liberian President Charles Taylor to serve the rest of his 50-year prison sentence in Rwanda. The special court for Sierra Leone ruled Wednesday there are no reasons why Taylor should not serve out his prison term in Britain's Franklin Prison. Taylor was jailed there in September 2013 after the court's appeals chamber upheld his conviction. An Italian court's ruling on whether to uphold the conviction of American Amanda Knox and her former Italian boyfriend for the killing of a British student, Meredith Kirchner, will likely be delayed until Friday, according to a judge. Italy's highest court had been expected to reach its decision Wednesday, but the prosecution's closing arguments were going more slowly than expected. The president of the panel of judges told reporters before adjourning for lunch that Friday may be the day to conclude the hearing. Meanwhile, here's a supporter of Amanda Knox outside the court.
I was wondering why Amanda's, like, they make a witch hunt about her, of her, and I get interested and involved in this case, and I'm totally convinced she's innocent, and also Raphael is innocent.
Online freedom activists in India are hailing a court ruling that struck down a controversial law seen as infringing free speech on the Internet. Anjana Pasricha reports.
The 24-year-old law student Shreya Singhal, who spearheaded the legal battle for overturning the harsh law, says it was the arrest of two young women in 2012 for a seemingly innocuous Facebook post that prompted her to petition the Supreme Court. Singhal was alarmed at their detention because she says she could have been the one to post the comment.
It was punishing people for expressing their views.
Scrapping the law on Tuesday, India's Supreme Court said a section of the Information Technology Act was vaguely worded and did not explain what could be inconvenient or grossly offensive. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, New Delhi.
Thousands of mourners packed the streets Wednesday paying respects to Singapore's late founder, Lee Kuan Yew. His body was transported on top of a gun carriage from the president's residence to the Parliament House. I'm Frances Alonso in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehi Swuhib, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
The journalists are apprehensive. Citizens are apprehensive. Voters are apprehensive. Our neighbors are apprehensive. Africa is apprehensive. The world is apprehensive.
That's Peter Nkanga of the Committee to Protect Journalists describing the mood in Nigeria prior to Saturday's presidential election. Details coming up.
Also in the news, Cameroon is hosting a conference on Islamic fundamentalism and extremism to educate Muslim clerics about the dangers of ideology espoused by extremist groups.
We'll have these stories, plus the sunny side of sports with Douglas Mpuga sitting in for Sunny, music from Burundi, and our daily features. So stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, Nigeria is preparing for its elections this Saturday, March 28th, in what is a tight race between President Goodluck Jonathan and his People's Democratic Party and challenger former military ruler Muhammadu Buhari of the All Progressives Congress. Nigeria's Independent National Electoral Commission, INEC, today is in the process of setting up voting stations throughout the country and should have this phase of the election preparations completed by the end of the day. Our colleague Peter Cloti is covering the elections and presently is on Victoria Island near Lagos. He provides us with an update on the latest developments leading up to Election Day.
The Independent National Electoral Commission, or INEC, says that ballot papers are being moved from the vault of the Central Bank of Nigeria to all parts of the country in readiness for Saturday's presidential election. And the ballot papers also include that of the National Assembly, which will be in April.
Are there any problems with this aspect of the election preparation? Is everything going smoothly at this point?
So far, so good. The electoral officials I spoke with said that the transportation is being supervised or being helped by the security agencies to ensure nobody tampers with them, and that so far things are running smoothly. They have until evening to complete this task, but so far so good.
And of course, Peter, there's always going to be various opinion polls out there, and I understand you have yet a latest one. I know we had one the other day. So what does this latest opinion poll show, and where did it come from?
Well, a group known as Nigeria Polls and Survey Group, which is an independent organization, just came out with the latest research stating that incumbent President Goodluck Jonathan of the ruling People's Democratic Party will win Saturday's presidential election with 7.01% of the votes. This comes as two other firms, Forward Magazine and Zevland Ventures Limited, tipped the president to win with about 17% of the votes. Of course, the opposition All Progressive Congress rejects all these polling groups, saying they are not a true reflection of the situation on the ground. They blame the PDP of funding the study to skew in its favor ahead of the election. They maintain that the APC has 4 out of the 6 geopolitical zones of Nigeria on its side. And they said they do not see any way by which President Goodluck Jonathan would win the Saturday's election, Kim.
How much influence do these opinion polls have on Nigerians who are going to be voting on Saturday?
Well, Kim, it remains to be seen how this will be influential, because several people I have spoken with are of the opinion that ethnic and religious sentiment are deeply rooted in how people vote in this country. So it really, really is difficult to predict how these polls at this late stage will influence people's opinion about how they vote or who they vote for in this presidential election, Kim.
Also, Peter, I understand there's a lot of talk going around there in Nigeria that if the PDP should lose this election, that it would go back to a military rule.
Yes, Kim. Former President Olusegun Obasanjo weighed in on this rumor today after a women's group paid a courtesy call on him. The women's group, of course, is from the All Progressive Congress, the main opposition APC. Former President Obasanjo warns of consequences if rumors that the PDP will hand over to a military regime is credible. He said that the move will undermine the integrity of the election as well as create chaos and instability in Nigeria, which he said will affect the entire West African continent. And he also said that both the African Union and the Economic Community of West African States, or ECOWAS, and Nigeria's international partners will not accept any move by the ruling party to stay in power by handing over to an interim military government. He said that will not happen, and the international community will not accept it either.
That was our colleague Peter Clodie speaking to us from Victoria Island, Lagos, Nigeria.
The Committee to Protect the Journalists says Nigerian media have been under intense pressure in the run-up to Saturday's elections. It says many reporters fear for their safety. The International Criminal Court recently warned that it had the power to investigate election-related violence in Nigeria. ICC prosecutor Fatou Ben Soda said any person who incites or engages in acts of violence in the context of the upcoming elections is liable to prosecution. Peter Nkanga is the West Africa representative for the Committee to Protect Journalists. He spoke to VOA's Jody Kapowa about the mood among journalists.
The mood can best be summed up exactly with just how the citizenry feels about the election. Because whether we want to take it or not, journalists are a reflection of the environment. And I can tell you that there is apprehension, there is reasonable fear. And that reasonable fear, unfortunately, if it should become a reality, will transcend to the first respondents in such violent states, the journalists. So journalists are apprehensive. Citizens are apprehensive. Voters are apprehensive. Our neighbors are apprehensive. Africa is apprehensive. The world is apprehensive. And that's exactly why even the ICC has come forward now to say, look, as International Criminal Court, that anything that happens in Nigeria, believe me, we are coming for you.
Did any of the Nigerian journalists be specific about the threats they were concerned about?
Threats have come from all locations, from the political parties themselves, their supporters, the security apparatus, be it the military or the police, or the DSS or the secret police. It has come from the mob, the public themselves, who, for want of better knowledge of the situation around them, see also journalists as a potential target. So the threats and the fear comes from all quarters, and that's why these elections must be violence-free. They're the ones documenting history, and those who are the perpetrators of this violence will not want to be captured in history. Therefore, journalists fear, and they are reasonable to fear. The National Human Rights Commission has come out to really state how deeply this fear is, that the violence that is characteristic of this 2015 elections might surpass that of 2011 elections, when at least 1,000 people died from post-election violence.
Did the Committee to Protect Journalists find this type of fear throughout the country or mainly in the north, where we've heard so much about the violence from Boko Haram?
This apprehension, this call for attention is all across the country. You find it in the north? Yes, it's a great deal. Journalists really feel fearful in the north. For example, in 2011, the same group of journalists, the NUJ, that is the Nigerian Union of Journalists, were also attacked in 2011 because they were documenting underage voters and reported it to the police. They became targets of the mob, who were totally against them reporting such truths.
Have you spoken to any journalists who said that they self-censored their own stories because of the fear of being attacked?
What you might otherwise want to do at the whim of a desire, you would think twice. Yes, journalists, definitely. They are more circumspect on what they publish or what they release. One will be asking ourselves that if they have reported what they are restraining themselves from reporting, what benefit would they have had on the society? So at the end of the day, it's a balancing act that journalists, especially in the North, are having to do.
Is the Committee to Protect Journalists making any recommendations at this point, or can anything be done at this point?
Well, I am very, very concerned about journalists covering the elections here in Nigeria. We're just getting unconfirmed reports now that some media house and international media organizations told the journalists have been detained in Maiduguri. And just some weeks back, the Reuters international correspondent was questioned on allegations of being a spy, and different things are happening. What I'm talking about, in essence, is the government must understand that journalists are there to just document history. They are not terrorists. They are not the ones who are instigating the violence. It's the political parties. And so anyone who comes out to attack a journalist, especially if it's deliberate, that person should not be allowed to go scot-free. The CPJ's concerns and recommendations that for whoever is in charge of overseeing security of journalists as well as of the society should do so without any partisanship to ensure that such attackers are brought to justice.
Peter Nkanga is the West Africa representative for the Committee to Protect Journalists. He spoke to VOA's Jody Kepawa.
Also, the Nigerian High Court has barred the nation's military from deploying troops at voting booths during the March 28th national elections. Lawyers for the minority whip of Nigeria's parliament, Femi Badjabiamila, won the case in the Lagos court. He claimed a strong military presence on voting day would intimidate voters and is in violation of the Constitution. The Lagos High Court lawsuit was filed after voters in Ekiti and Osun in the southwest complained that soldiers conspired to intimidate voters and rig results in last year's by-elections. The court says the decision does not affect the large presence of Nigeria's military in the northwest, where forces from five West African states are fighting Boko Haram rebels. In another development, the government has closed its land and sea borders ahead of Saturday's vote. Interior Minister Patrick Moro says intelligence reports indicate foreigners are trying to enter the country to vote. You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehiz Wuhib, 17 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. The Committee to Protect Journalists says Nigerian media have been under intense pressure in the run-up to Saturday's elections. And the Nigerian High Court has barred the nation's military from deploying troops at voting booths during the March 28th national elections. And would like to hear your thoughts on our stories. You can write to us at Africa News Tonight, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue, Southwest Washington, D.C., 20237.
Well, Cameroon is hosting a conference on Islamic fundamentalism and extremism. The aim is to educate Muslim clerics in the country about the dangers of ideology espoused by extremist groups like the Islamic State and Boko Haram, the Nigerian terrorist group that has recently declared its allegiance to the self-described Islamic Caliphate. Moki Edwin Kinzika reports from Yaoundé.
Suleiman Abba, a Muslim cleric and member of Cameroon's Islamic Cultural and Development Association, says the group organized the conference in collaboration with the government to stop supporters of Islamic State ideology from extending their ideas to Cameroon. He says Islamic State ideology basically centers on promoting terrorism, violence, and intolerance.
Islam is against terrorism. And Islam is again Boko Haram. Cameroonian Muslims have to defend their country, which has been attacked by the terrorists. And secondly, fight the instrumentalization of Islam. We have some people who use Islam to reach their own interests. Islam is peace, and every Muslim in the world should be an ambassador of this peace.
Cameroon's Muslim community traditionally receives funding to construct Islamic schools, mosques, and health centers from mosques in Pakistan and Saudi Arabia. But now, students from the Central African nation and clerics are being granted scholarships to study in Arab nations. Suleiman says that since Boko Haram declared its allegiance to the Islamic State, his organization has received information that the Nigerian-based militants are extending their beliefs to Cameroon. He says some mosques are being asked to implement Sharia law, which is one of the objectives of Boko Haram.
Sharia law is defined as the law from Allah. That law has the penal and the civil aspect. Today, when they are talking about Sharia, they just see the penal aspect. Sharia means, for instance, praying, fasting during the month of Ramadan. So we should not follow these terrorists who want to make us know that Sharia is just punitive. We have also a civil aspect. We should take it into consideration.
But not every Muslim agrees. Modibo Mustafa Issa is a cleric in Marwa on Cameroon's northern border with Nigeria, a stronghold of Boko Haram. He says Allah's message in the Holy Quran should never be compromised for whatever reason. According to him, it was even wrong to invite Christians he described as unbelievers to discuss with Muslims.
Et c'est pour cela qu'Allah Jalla wa Ala, lorsqu'il a parlé de ceux qui n'utilisent pas leur sens pour comprendre et pour regarder ce qu'Allah Jalla wa Ala veut.
He says in the Holy Quran, Allah calls those who do not use their intelligence to know what he wants beasts. He says such people have eyes but do not see, have hearts but do not understand anything, and have ears but do not hear, and will never be accepted by Allah. The conference brought together Christians and Muslims to teach them to promote interreligious tolerance and shun extremism. Reverend Pastor Libon Lilikeng of the Presbyterian Church says Cameroon, more than ever, needs to preach tolerance to avoid interreligious conflicts.
You know, people have different views. The normal thing is to accept, but the abnormal will be the non-acceptance of people really acting in good ethics. What I teach is being committed to God and being active in the social life. It is possible. You can have example of people really being true believers and true actors of in the social scene.
When the Nigerian terrorist group began fighting to create an Islamist caliphate in northern Nigeria, the fighting spilled over to Cameroon. Sociologist Dr. Bridget Ngemba of the University of Yaoundé 1 says the Islamic State ideology Boko Haram has opted for may have a dangerous spillover into Cameroon.
En termes d'idéologie, je voudrais tout simplement dire que l'approche militaire va contribuer à diminuer.
She says a military approach can contribute to reducing violence from terrorism groups, but as far as ideology is concerned, fighting it will take a lot of time because ideology cannot be fought with war weapons. Cameroon has had a history of interreligious tolerance and peaceful coexistence with other denominations until the Nigerian extremist group began attacking the country as it fought to create an Islamic caliphate. Cameroon arrested dozens of Muslim clerics and their faithful for collaborating with the terrorist group. Boko Haram's adherence to the Islamic State has sparked fears the country may come under the influence of extremists. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Islamic State militants claimed responsibility today for a suicide bombing a day earlier in the eastern Libyan city of Benghazi that killed at least 7 soldiers. Yesterday's attack involved an assailant ramming a car into an army checkpoint. The latest violence came as the United Nations presented a 6-part plan to push forward peace talks in the country that remains fractured with rival governments and militias battling for control. The proposal includes a unity government and a committee to draft a new constitution, as well as plans for new elections after the constitution is in place. The UN's mission in Libya said in a statement explaining the plan, Libya is risking widespread confrontation and deeper division in which terrorism and its expansion will become a serious threat to the country and the region.
Violence and political chaos have plagued Libya since longtime dictator Muammar Gaddafi was overthrown and killed in 2011.
The Egyptian president addressed his hopes and concerns about sharing waters of the Nile River while addressing the Ethiopian parliament today during his first official state visit to Ethiopia. Marta van der Wolf reports from Addis Ababa.
Ethiopia is building Africa's largest hydropower dam using waters of the Nile. President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi said he understands the need for Ethiopia to develop, but warned that conflict should be avoided when utilizing resources and seeking progress. He says your Egyptian brothers also have the right, not only to development, but also the right to life itself, and to live in safe haven on the banks of the River Nile. Ethiopia says that the $4 billion dam will not affect Egypt's access to Nile water. The energy produced from the dam is to be used for Ethiopia's domestic market and for export to countries in the region. The speech comes 2 days after Mr. el-Sisi signed an agreement on the Nile with Ethiopian Prime Minister Hailemariam Desalegn and Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir. No details were released, but the agreement is believed to focus on resolving misunderstandings between Nile countries, causing no harm to one another, and promising to work out detailed procedures in the near future. President el-Sisi called on leaders of all Nile countries to work together on reaching a consensus about the waters. He says one that allows us to overcome the differences and outstanding points in the Nile Basin Initiative Framework Agreement for it to include all the basin countries and to address all their needs. Tensions between Ethiopia and Egypt rose after Ethiopia started dam construction in 2012. Although most of the Nile's water originates in Ethiopia, an old colonial era agreement gives Egypt the right to over 80% of Nile water. Ethiopia's dam, named the Grand Ethiopian Renaissance Dam, is now about 40% completed. Marta van der Wolf for VOA News, Addis Ababa.
This is Africa News Tonight with Kim Lewis. I'm Yehiz Ruhib in Washington. It's 27 minutes past the hour on The Voice of America.
Nigeria Decides 2015, the final hours of the presidential campaign for Nigeria. What happens there matters throughout Africa. VOA News is ready with the largest team of international journalists in Nigeria and surrounding countries. Turn to Voice of America for the facts. Nigeria Decides 2015, on radio with Daybreak Africa, Africa News Tonight, and Nightline Africa. On television with Africa 54 and Straight Talk Africa. On the web at voanews.com. Special coverage of Nigeria presidential election voting begins this Saturday, with results as the votes are counted, and on the web to show you where the counting stands and where the votes are coming from. Nigeria Decides 2015. A commitment to Africa from Voice of America.
Join host Chaka Sali and VOA's Straight Talk Africa this Saturday at 1800 UTC for special coverage of Nigeria's elections. You will get on-the-ground reports from VOA's journalists in Nigeria, in-depth discussion, and expert analysis of the most important election issues. Join us for Straight Talk Africa special Nigeria Decides right here on Voice of America.
Celebrate the sounds of Africa today, yesterday, and tomorrow. That's our mission in your show, Music Time in Africa. Hello, I'm your host, Heather Maxwell. Join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC and discover the best Pan-African music in the world. We play it all right here. Only the best on VOA Africa.
This is African News Tonight on the Voice of America. Here's a brief recap of our top stories this hour. The Nigerian High Court has barred the nation's military from deploying troops at voting booths during the March 28th national elections. And Cameroon is hosting a conference on Islamic fundamentalism and extremism to educate Muslim clerics about the dangers of ideology espoused by extremist groups. Coming up, we'll have music from Burundi, and in our feature segment, Nigeria is suffering from a gasoline shortage because of falling oil prices. I'm Kim Lewis with Yahya Swuhib, and we're live from Washington. This is African News Tonight on the VOA. Sports is next. And it's time now for the sunny side of sports with the mighty Douglas Mpuga sitting in for Sonny Young today. Hello, Douglas.
Hello, Kim.
What's on tap today?
Well, Kim will kick off with African football.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Ivorian soccer stars goalkeeper Boubacar Berry and defender Kolo Touré will mark the end of their Ivory Coast careers in this week's friendly matches. Both players retired from international duty after helping the Elephants win the Africa Cup of Nations this year. But they are in the squad to face Angola in Abidjan on Thursday and away to Equatorial Guinea on Sunday. Berry and Touré will say farewell in front of their own fans at the Félix Humphrey Boigny Stadium. Berry was the star of the penalty shootout victory in last month's Nations Cup final, and Touré also had a fine game in the central defence. The pair were given honorary places in a 20-man team selection as Ivory Coast uses the games to celebrate its success. That means Manchester City pair Yaya Touré and Wilfried Bony and Roma star Jovino will also travel for the friendlies. Elsewhere on the continent, losing Nations Cup finalists Ghana have two friendlies against Senegal and Mali in France in 4 days. Those teams have both reacted to poor African Cup campaigns by firing their coaches. For Ghana, the game gives coach Avran Grant a chance to start planning for 2017 Africa Cup of Nations qualifiers. Qualifying for the 2018 World Cup in Russia will start in October. Top-ranked African team Algeria has games against Qatar and Oman in Doha, while Tunisia travels China and Morocco will face Uruguay at home on Saturday. Morocco were thrown out of the 2017 and 2019 Africa Cup of Nations after declining to host this year, although the Moroccans intend to appeal against the ruling. Nigeria has a hastily arranged game against Uganda on Wednesday after Bolivia pulled out. Nigeria said Bolivia chickened out, and the Nigerian Football Federation indicated it will take legal action against Bolivia through FIFA for breach of contract. Goalkeeper Vincent Enyama will make his 100th appearance for Nigeria if he plays against the Ugandans or against South Africa on Sunday. Four-time Africa champions Cameroon had matches away in Indonesia and Thailand that some described as inadequate. Legendary Cameroon striker Roger Miller was quoted as saying, "Lower-ranked Indonesia and Thailand were not good enough for position, and the nation's national team would gain more by playing a local Cameroonian club." In other games, surprise Africa Cup semi-finalist Congo play Iraq in the United Arab Emirates, and 29-year-old John McKinstry, one of the youngest coaches in international football, takes charge for the first time against the 2012 Africa champions Zambia. Egypt meet Equatorial Guinea in neutral Morocco on Thursday. Now, for more sports news, let's go to Johannesburg, South Africa, and join Daybreak Africa's Mark Homer. Mark starts with basketball.
Africa. Defending champions Nigeria Tigers host Burkina Faso in the return leg of their men's 2015 All-Africa Games qualifiers in Lagos today, Wednesday. Fresh from their weekend triumph at the Four Nations Basketball Challenge in Johannesburg, South Africa, the Nigerian Tigers coach Sani Ahmed reckons the outing was a bonus for his inexperienced home-based players.
The organizers have done very well. The competition level is still high also. It's an experience for my team because about 11 of the players are playing in Nigeria. Most of them have not gone for international competition. So at least this is an experience for them to play outside.
You've had an All-Africa Games outing in Ouagadougou, qualifiers. You're the defending champions. And you've come for this tournament. How does it augur for your match return leg against Burkina Faso in Lagos?
I think winning this championship will give us as a morale booster. And the guys will come all out. Being that we have gone to Ouagadougou and we won, so definitely we'll come all out at home and try to win.
That was Sani Ahmed, coach of the Nigerian Tigers, speaking in Johannesburg, South Africa. Turning to volleyball, Algerian champions GS Petrolia begin their title defense at the Africa Women's Club Volleyball Championships in Cairo, Egypt, today, Wednesday. The winner of the tournament will represent Africa at the World Women's Club Volleyball Championships in Zurich, Switzerland, later this year. In football, draws for the 2016 Orange Africa Nations Championship CHAN qualifiers and the draw for the inaugural Africa Beach Soccer Championships in Seychelles take place in Cairo, Egypt on the 5th of April, the Confederation of African Football revealed on Tuesday. 42 teams are vying for the 15 slots to the CHAN due in Rwanda, while 8 teams will play in the Africa Beach Soccer event. Finally, Botswana hosts Lesotho in a friendly match in Lobatse as Swaziland welcomes South Africa to Lobambo today, Wednesday.
Daybreak Africa's Mark Ouma reporting from Johannesburg. Thanks, Mark.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kilohertz, 19.2 meter band. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.
Yes, you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports. Now let's move on to athletics. The world's fastest man, Usain Bolt, will compete at the Adidas Grand Prix in New York City for the first time since 2008. Bolt will return to the IAAF Diamond League meeting on June 13th in what some describe as a homecoming of sorts as he set his first world record in winning the 100 meters in 9.72 at Icahn Stadium on May 31st, 2008. His 100-meter world record now stands at 9.58, while his 200-meter mark is 19.19. Bolt has competed in the U.S. only once since that night, when he anchored the Jamaican 4x100 meters team at the 2010 Penn Rallies. Since that electric night at Icahn Stadium 7 years ago, the 28-year-old Jamaican has won 6 Olympic gold medals and 8 world championship titles, broken 7 more world records, and become one of the most famous people on the planet. Already the first man to win 6 Olympic gold medals in sprinting at 100 meters, 200 meters, and 4x100 meters in both 2008 and 2012, Bolt hopes to add to that legacy at the 2016 Olympic Games in Rio de Janeiro. He recently announced his plans to retire after the 2017 IAAF World Championships in London. One of the premier athletics events in the world, the Adidas Grand Prix, has hosted 2 world records and 17 national records in its first 10 years and its fans have had the privilege of witnessing more than a dozen USA all-comers records. Bolt's 2008 performance qualifies in all 3 categories. The 7th stop on the international IAAF Diamond League circuit, the Adidas Grand Prix, is in its 11th year at Icahn Stadium on Randall's Island. Meanwhile, controversial sprinter Justin Gatlin has won a new sponsorship deal by U.S. sportswear giant Nike. The 33-year-old American dominated the 100-meter and 200-meters in 2014 and is some experts' favorite to win a golden double at the August World Championships. Gatlin served two doping bans, including a four-year suspension between 2006 and 2010. He was sponsored by Nike prior to his second ban, but has been wearing Chinese firm X-Steps kit since 2012. His U.S. teammate Tyson Gay has also recently returned from a drugs ban, will also be wearing Nike clothes and spikes for this season, although the company denies this is a result of a formal tie-in. The Oregon-based company said Gay, who was dropped by Adidas when he tested for a banned substance in 2013, is getting its equipment because he has started working with Nike-sponsored coach John Smith in Los Angeles. And that's it for this edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. I'm Douglas Impuga. Sunny Young will be back tomorrow. Now back to you, Kim.
Thank you, Douglas. And listen to the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 1631 UTC and 1831 UTC. And on Fridays, Sunny has an expanded half-hour edition of the Sunny Side of Sports at 1730 hours UTC right here on the Voice of America.
Coming up, Nigeria suffering from a gasoline shortage because of falling oil prices. And next, a sharp increase in land disputes in Uganda. But first, some music. Here is Steady Bonga of Sierra Leone with Mama Ciala.
Mama Sela, Mama Sela, Mama Sela. for sleep. This song really the one I need. I can put sugar na me multi tan like salt. I can put salt na me multi tan like a sugar. Some people when they born, they no fit for bump. Because they able take care for the picking with me I want. Now he make we a born, now man no go left, I'm not toilet. Now he make we a born, now man no go throw, I'm not gutter. Me mates, they laugh me because I no born thinking. And this I ego, he dey quell me name. If he no even help me, do ya no quell me name. And smile at the shape, all man go get. And smile at the shape, all man go get. He so glad the way, then don't drive me na us. Today na you young, tomorrow go be me young. I go do ya, I dey beg you. Do ya help me, for make I go get me deep. He's provoking, don't really need him on me. Ooh yeah, mama say.
Every day and night you dey cry, mama. Every day you dey cry, say God no give you cookie. Mama most you don't regret and wait to make it born. Every day and night it begin to bring problems. Not so so wala, mama sweat and cause. Nothing on the way go make mama glad for picking. Get mama. Look how they rough and like you know get papa. It's too shameful, it's too sorryful. It's too shameful, it's too sorryful. Hey Kalilu, you make your mama cry. Hey Kalilu, you make your papa shame. Papa God give. Not so old picking, where God come for better you. You keep on picking, but you don't go bound your heart. For born picking, not so in a thing. But for make it come make, waiting go better for you. Mama do ya, left for cry. Now God know why make you not give you pity. Now for put you hope and trust you, Papa God.
Daddy Bongo of Sierra Leone with Mama Sela.
Well, Nigeria is suffering from a gasoline shortage as falling oil prices have affected the country's ability to import and distribute refined fuels. Coming just weeks before elections scheduled for March 28th, the shortage could have a big impact on the campaign trail. Henry Ridgewell reports for VOA.
In Abuja, the lines of cars waiting for gas are growing longer. Acute fuel shortages are gripping towns and cities across the country. Workers reliant on their cars are losing money fast, like taxi driver Bartholomew Ode Akpa.
I work at the airport as a car hire. Now I'm supposed to be in my at the airport now, but there's no way for me, no fuel for me to go and look for something to do.
Nigeria is one of the world's top producers of crude oil and exports around 2 million barrels per day, but it doesn't have the refinery capacity to meet fuel demand, so it relies on imports. That makes the country vulnerable to a turbulent market, says Virginia Komoli of the International Institute for Strategic Studies.
Although Nigeria has tried over the past few years to diversify its economy, 80% of government revenues are still dependent on the oil industry.
The falling oil price has hit Nigeria's currency, the Naira, and traders say government fuel subsidies are not being paid. The CEO of the Seplat Petroleum Development Company, Austin Avuru, is calling on the government to boost domestic refining capacity.
Then you find out that the boom and bust elements of changes in crude oil prices will have much more negligible impact on our GDP growth than you have it today. And I think that's our countries should be moving in terms of how they manage their natural resources.
Nigerian Minister of Aviation Osita Benjamin Chidoka told VOA President Goodluck Jonathan is trying to reduce Nigeria's dependence on crude oil production.
One of our major foreign currency earners is oil, but it's also an opportunity for Nigeria. It creates an opportunity that luckily for us, our president has committed to improving agriculture over the past few years, diversifying the economy, removing the subsidies that are kind of fueling a dependency culture.
The timing is difficult for President Goodluck Jonathan as he campaigns, trying to secure another 4 years in office. The elections have already been postponed once due to insecurity caused by the Boko Haram insurgency. It's not only Nigeria that is suffering, says Virginia Komoli.
Other regional countries, countries that export their goods into Nigeria, will suffer from a reduction in demand from the Nigerian market.
Analysts warn that continued low oil prices have the potential to cause unrest because the government will be forced to cut back on public spending. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Ugandan police say there has been a sharp increase in land disputes, about 10 new cases being reported each day. The claims come amid an oil boom as investors appear to be cashing in by selling parcels of land to multiple buyers. Meanwhile, the people who have been living on the land for decades are chased away, sometimes with heavy hand. Sergino Ruzbol Blood reports.
They say it came as a total surprise. The more than 1,000 people living in a makeshift camp called Ramutonga in the Hoima district in western Uganda say they have been kicked off their land without any warning because it has been earmarked for oil exploration. During early morning in late August of last year, the people woke up to the sounds of chaos and gunfire.
So what they are going ahead with gun and then burning house and then stealing our goods, and they come with a lorry, about vehicle, there are six like this. Everything which they are looting, some are they are burning house and then we are running away.
According to the police, 10 new cases of land disputes are reported daily, making it difficult to control the situation. But Ramutonga's case is slightly different, according to local government official Ambrose Mwensije. He says there are clear laws and regulating land ownership in Uganda, and that the people of Ramutonga do not have any proof that they either inherited or bought the land or were hosted by the owner. In his reading of the events, the people are used as proxies in a land dispute between what is to him, the rightful owner, and someone who is, quote, encroaching on the land. However, Ramutonga Helen Ayesiga disagrees. She says the government is not protecting them as it should.
We normally vote for the governing party, but they don't recognize us as Ugandans. We are here suffering. So my appeal is that the government should come and assist, because soon they will rush for votes, but they don't recognize us as Ugandans. Why do we even vote?
NAPE is a local grassroots community organization helping people in the oil-rich region of Hoima against exploitation. A few times a week, they host a local community radio show offering a platform to victims of land disputes and informing the people about their rights. According to NAPE field officer and radio host Vincent Nyengenya, the story of Ramutonga is not exceptional.
Major complaints about land grabbing. Once they learned that there is oil here, people from different parts of the country, from different parts of the world, have come here to Bunyoro to grab our land. They have been cheap, buying it cheaply. Others have been conniving with other government officials to grab people's land.
A court judgment that will determine whether the people of Ramutonga can go back to what they call their homelands is set for March 23rd. One thing is sure, if the court rules against them, they will have to pack their belongings again and find a new home. Serginho Rosblatt for VOA News, Hoima.
Hoima. This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz. Tune in to Africa News Tonight at 16 and 18 hours UTC, Monday through Friday. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Up next, our VOA editorial. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at www.voaafrica.com. And on behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Audrey Oswegas, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The U.S. Department of State in early March recognized 10 women from around the globe with the Secretary of State's International Women of Courage Awards. They were honored for their outstanding contributions to peace, human rights, gender equality, and social progress. These are women who speak and act against injustice, inequality, and insecurity. Some work to improve their communities or to better the plight of women and children. Others forge a path for others to follow. They include journalists who expose crimes against women or ties between violent extremists and local organizations, advocates for human rights and peaceful reconciliation of conflict, founders of NGOs that help women succeed, or those that band women together to seek to redress injustice. One is a nurse who contracted Ebola while treating others for the disease, recovered, and returned to work. Another is Afghanistan's first female fixed-wing Air Force pilot. Women are more than victims, said Ambassador-at-Large for Global Women's Issues, Catherine Russell.
We know that women are also important agents of change in their country, that they do positive, courageous things every day, and we want that to be part of this narrative, too. We want to show a woman, even a woman who hasn't been involved in politics, can have a huge impact on her country. And we've seen some of those nominees here today.
You need to have courage, first of all, not fear, said awardee Arbana Jara, a Kosovar journalist.
I'm a mom of two kids. Of course, I have to work 10 to 12 hours a day and having threats and all of it. But if you...
Nigeria decides 2015. The final hours of the presidential campaign for Nigeria. What happens there matters throughout Africa. VOA News is ready with the largest team of international journalists in Nigeria and surrounding countries. Turn to Voice of America for the facts. Nigeria Decides 2015 on radio with Daybreak Africa, Africa News Tonight, and Nightline Africa. On television with Africa 54 and Straight Talk Africa. On the web at voanews.com. Special coverage of Nigeria presidential election voting begins this Saturday, with results as the votes are counted, and on the web to show you where the counting stands and where the votes are coming from. Nigeria Decides 2015. A commitment to Africa from Voice of America.
Join host Chaka Sali and VOA's Straight Talk Africa this Saturday at 1800 UTC for special coverage of Nigeria's elections. You will get on-the-ground reports from VOA's journalists in Nigeria, in-depth discussion, and expert analysis of the most important election issues. Join us for Straight Talk Africa special Nigeria Decides right here on Voice of America. VOA.
Hello, I'm Douglas Simpoga. Join me for Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share their ideas on the topic at hand. So, please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
VOA podcasts are a convenient way to get your information on the run.
VOAAfrica.com.
Visit VOAAfrica.com and subscribe to our podcast.